Well, alrighty, gang, welcome back to the Gutowski Files, starring our very own Stephen Gutowski. He is the founder, editor-in-chief, lead writer. We did this last week, never mind. He is the founder and CEO and head honcho over at TheReload.com. And if I haven't mentioned it recently, it's on me. TheReload.com is in a very unique space, kind of like active self-protection. They're over there doing the Lord's work, bringing us as politics-free as possible, as bias-free as humanly possible, sane, sober reporting on the Second Amendment and all things gun-related. So go over there to TheReload.com and give them a look and consider getting a membership. Stephen, how are you, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. Just finished recording our podcast for the Weekly Reload podcast and the main interview, I think it's going to be a pretty good one.
Very good. So where can the folks find that and who's on this week?
Yeah, this is, you can find it anywhere, basically, just like this show, any podcasts app you've got or YouTube as well. We make clips and put them on YouTube too. And this week we have the head of the Self-Defense Brigade, which is a group that is marching, having armed marches in Hartford, Connecticut to try and push back against some of the violence they've seen up there. So it's a very, very interesting community-based group of gun rights activists, I guess you could call them. I don't know what you would call them, but they're community violence prevention activists, but not in the sense that you might normally hear that terms. So pretty unique movement and really interesting guy that's leading it. I think it'll be a really good episode.
Very good. Well, I'll have to give that a listen. That sounds very interesting. There's always concerns. Let me just ask you this. Are they actually out sort of patrolling to prevent crime, or are they just having these sort of marches to let the community know, hey, we're out here? Or?
I think it's a combination of both of those things. It's a group of minorities who live in the area, right? Primarily black Hartford residents who are doing this as sort of a self-policing effort. They're not like making arrests or anything like that. They're just kind of show of force. Like there was a murder there recently that sparked the latest round of protest or marching, not really protesting, but marching. And it's obviously been controversial among some of this is Connecticut we're talking about, obviously. So some of the gun control advocates there and the mayor have been critical of this movement. And so, I wanted to have them on and have on the head of it and give people a really clear and in-depth understanding of what he's thinking, what they're trying to accomplish. And I think it was a really good interview. So people will be able to get that sort of insight from it. Once it comes out next, it'll be out publicly next Monday. Of course, Reload members get it a day early. We also have a Reload member segment this week. That's another thing that we do over on the Weekly Reload podcast, which Reload members will be on and we get sort of a better feeling of the community there. So I think it'll be a good episode.
Very cool. And you don't have to almost die to be on Stephen's show. So that's definitely an incentive. You can just go over there and just talk to him. He's a very reasonable guy. Let's talk after. Maybe I can talk to your guest one of these days over here on the show. That could be fascinating to talk to him. That's very interesting.
Yeah. Although hopefully he won't have to get into a situation that would normally precipitate coming on the show, but I think that that'd be a good idea.
Well, maybe you'll do a bonus or something. Well, we'll talk about it anyway.
Yeah.
So this week we are talking about an article over at The Reload, this one by contributing writer Jake Fogelman. It is dated March 11th of 2024. The headline is Federal Judge Strikes Down California Gun Sale Rationing Restriction. And my understanding of this is, was it one gun a month that California said you could buy and for some reason think this is the golden key to end all mass shootings or something stupid? I'm sorry. I'm editorializing. Go ahead, Stephen.
Well, I think the intention from those who advocated for the bill is California's not the only one that has a bill like this. In fact, Virginia, where I live, has a one gun a month policy. Mm-hmm. California's, as you might guess, is sort of the strictest in the country where it's for any guns and there's really no exceptions to it unless you're law enforcement, which gets accepted from like all of the gun restrictions in California, of course. But, they had a much stricter version of this, but there are several states that have a sort of restriction on how many guns you can buy in a month or in a certain period of time. And, so this one applies to all guns, whereas in Virginia, like we have one gun a month, policy, but it only applies to people who don't have concealed carry permits, for instance, which, but the goal of it is meant to be sort of anti-trafficking is how you usually see these justified. The idea being that like a trafficker will come in and buy a bunch of guns at once in order to take them out of state and sell them to criminals or something, or they'll use a network of people doing straw purchases to accomplish this or what have you. And so that's how they're usually justified. But yeah, this one was found to be unconstitutional by a federal judge out there in California, a district court judge. So sort of the first level of a federal case against it.
So was this a lawsuit brought by someone, or was this a criminal case that reached the court?
This was a gun rights lawsuit.
Okay.
And so this is another one where that you've seen some success at the lower levels of the court system in California against some of these toughest in the nation restrictions. But this, I think the first time I can recall seeing, there might be one, maybe I'm missing one, but it's the first time I recall seeing this particular policy be struck down. And it was struck down as you might expect under the Bruin standard. We've talked a lot about that on the show, throughout the history of this show, because it's been very consequential, especially in lower court rulings, where essentially it's based on the idea that for a gun restriction to be constitutional, to comport with the Second Amendment, it has to have at least a close analogous relation to an actual historical tradition of regulating guns in the same way that dates back to the founding era.
Right.
And so essentially the judge found that that just wasn't the case for this sort of restriction on how many guns a lawful person could buy.
So back in the founding, Jebediah O'Rourke could have hoarded as many muskets as he wanted is the idea.
Yeah, there weren't any sort of limits on how many guns you could buy in the founding era. There's no evidence of laws like that at the time.
Yeah, and the common, let's address this really quick, the elephant in the room, the common refrain from anti-gun folks tends to be, well, yeah, but at the founding, all there were muskets and cannons, and they didn't have this advanced technology. And my retort to that is always, that's true. Guns are far more lethal than they were then. Obviously, you know, you have everything from rifling to optics to magnifiers to magazines, none of which they had back then. But what about the First Amendment? You know, they didn't have the internet, right, at the founding. So does that mean we can't, you know, they can restrict internet, you know, speech because it wasn't around? And that's usually the retort that I hear is, and it just doesn't hold water with me. You know, technology will advance. That doesn't change the fact that the point of the Second Amendment is actually not to defend your home or carry a pistol, you know, to prevent crime. That wasn't anywhere in the text. The idea of the Second Amendment is, in the event the government gets out of control and tyrannical, the people have something like equivalent, you know, weaponry to fight a tyrannical government. Am I mistaken? Is that accurate?
Well, what I will say on that front is the Supreme Court has directly addressed the first half of that you talked about, this idea of like, militia? No, the idea that, you know, modern guns wouldn't be right. covered by the Second Amendment, and they called it borderline frivolous. That was, what they wrote in, Satano, which is a 2016 case that dealt with a Massachusetts ban on stun guns, because obviously stun guns were not around during the founding era. And that was one of the main reasons that Massachusetts State Supreme Court had upheld its ban on those types of arms. It upheld a conviction of a woman over this. And the court accepted that case and unanimously ruled against the Massachusetts Supreme Court. And one of the things they said is that, you know, this is not a viable argument, the idea that the only weapons that existed during the founding were muskets and such.
Interesting. So who are the two parties in this case? Who brought the suit? And I assume it's the California Attorney General's office or Solicitor General that's arguing for the state. And then what's the next step in this? Will the state appeal this, do you think? And where does it go from there?
Yeah, I believe this was brought by gun rights group, not a gun control group. There's certainly a high likelihood. I think it was Firearms Policy Coalition was one of the groups involved in this. And the Attorney General's office hasn't responded to us, our request for comment on whether they plan to appeal. I would say it's highly likely they will appeal. In fact, the Firearms Policy Coalition, a statement that they put out basically said that they expect the attorney general to appeal this decision and that they'll continue to fight this case. That has been a common theme in California in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is where this would head next, that California almost never gives up on fighting these cases. And with Second Amendment cases, they almost always get to not just have their appeals accepted, but even if there's a, you know, the next level here is the three judge panel of the Ninth Circuit, right? And sometimes those panels will rule against California's gun laws or another state in the Ninth Circuit and, you know, on Second Amendment grounds. And every time that's happened, the court has then accepted the next option of appeal because they don't have to do this, but there are what's called en banc hearings where you take the case from that three judge panel and go up to what would be called a full panel, even though it's technically some of this stuff gets kind of nerdy and very technical, but a full panel is not actually all of the judges on the Ninth Circuit because the Ninth Circuit's very big, but it's like 15 judges instead of three. And most of the time, every time that the Second Amendment case is won at the three judge panel level, the court has always accepted the en banc appeal and then ruled against the gun rights plaintiffs and in favor of whatever the law was. That's happened several times. And it's interesting because, you know, the Ninth Circuit is limited on how many of those en banc cases they can actually do physically in a year. And so the fact that they keep taking all the Second Amendment ones where the gun rights plaintiffs have won has been a very common complaint among gun rights activists and advocates in that time. I think we talked a little while back about there was a gun related case that the court decided not to take en banc.
Yeah.
And so maybe these things are changing a little bit, but you know, that's a key context, I think, for this whole case is this ruling, while still important and substantial, is at the first stage of the federal court system and in the Ninth Circuit where this is the history there, right? So you will get rulings against California gun laws occasionally at the lower levels, at the district court judge stage like this one, or at the three judge panel stage. And the big problem that gun rights advocates have run into, even when they've won at these lower court levels, is that the full court has often stepped in to reverse those rulings when necessary. So that's one thing to look out for. But if this does stand, you know, and there have been times where California has declined to defend at least parts of their laws. Mm-hmm. You saw this with the micro stamping requirement, and they lost on the handgun roster, the safe handgun roster that they have in California, which is basically a list of guns that you're legally allowed to buy. And had, because they had this micro stamping requirement where there aren't any guns that have micro stamping technology in them. Yeah, so basically it was just a ban on modern handguns for the regular public in California. They basically agreed to stop enforcing that part of their handgun roster law when the appeal came to go to the next level for that. So very occasionally you will see them change course on these things. You saw this with the youth shooting sports law that they passed that had what's appeared to be an unintended effect of essentially shutting down all youth shooting sports in the states. And when their intended target was to go after like gun advertising they didn't like. And instead there were all these significant unintended consequences, and they went back and tried to fix that. And so occasionally they'll do that. Usually they'll appeal and just stick with fighting the case. And as I noted, a lot of times if the Second Amendment advocates win, you still get to that final level of the Ninth Circuit and will be reversed. That's been the trend, at least.
So let's read some tea leaves. So assuming this goes up to the full Ninth Circuit and the Ninth Circuit sides with the complainants, the people bringing the suit, and this law is struck down in California, and for whatever reason, it never gets to the Supreme Court. What, if any, effect might that have on other circuits? So for example, in Virginia, might might that have any effect, or is it just, okay, this is just for the states within the Ninth Circuit?
Yeah, that's a great question, right? That's another complication here with the way the federal court system works. Technically, it would not have any effect outside of the Ninth Circuit. The ruling would only stand in the Ninth Circuit. It would make it more likely that the Supreme Court could take up a case on the question if, you know, if somebody challenges the Virginia law, for instance, and they lose, but they, whereas these guys won in California, that creates what's called a circuit split. And then the court is much more likely to try and, give an answer on that. That's where a lot of Supreme Court cases come from, right? Not all of them, but, that's where a lot of them come from. The circuits, we got a bunch of different circuits, they're right below the Supreme Court. If they have disagreements on a specific question, well, that's where they go to solve that disagreement. The Supreme Court is supreme. It makes the ultimate decision on these complicated legal questions when the lower courts disagree on them. But yeah, as far as like, if these guys win and, or California doesn't appeal this ruling or something, they get rid of their law, which is highly unlikely, obviously. But if that were to happen, it wouldn't have any binding effect on Virginia, because we're not in the Ninth Circuit. We're on the other side of the country, in fact, right? But it would have, often those rulings can be cited even outside of the circuits where they're binding precedent, right? You can still point to them if you're suing Virginia over its law and say, look, here in California, the same question was asked and the judge agreed with our position on it. That's super common too. It's not binding, but it's still something that you can point to when you're arguing in federal court that federal judges might give more credence to.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I'm kind of split on this personally, editorializing now. Have to make sure I mention that because Stephen's an actual reporter. I'm kind of conflicted when it comes to this sort of thing because I feel like the people, you know, in the Northwest and the people in the Southeast have very different cultures. They have different accents. They have different food. They have different a lot of things. And a big part of me, the Libertarian Party, wants to let people in their own area decide how they're going to live their lives, right? The problem with the firearms aspect is, you know, you could be perfectly legal doing one thing, you know, on one side of the street. And if the state border runs down that street, you're to the side of the street, you're a felon all of a sudden. So I feel like this is something that should be as uniform as possible across the country, which conflicts with my earlier statement, of course.
I think the reason that this rises to the level of having a national set policy on something is that, you know, either, you know, the federal courts only deal with questions that arise from federal laws, right, which apply uniformly across the country, or from rights guaranteed in the federal constitution and applied to individuals,
right?
And applied to state laws through the 14th Amendment, called incorporation. It's a whole another sort of complicated legal theory, but basically, the modern court has said that the Bill of Rights doesn't just apply to federal laws; it also applies to state laws. And so that's why you get, that's where this would come is like, why does this need to be a national question, or why are these things being decided by federal courts when we're talking about a California state law, right? And that's because the argument is that this California state law violates the federal constitution, which protects all Americans, right? Against both federal and state laws. So at least that's how the court has interpreted it wasn't always interpreted this way, but that's how they've interpreted it for quite a while now. It's not a new thing, but that's why you get these fights that are over state laws, but have national implications. And so, you know, presumably if California's one gun a month ban violates the Second Amendment, the federal Second Amendment, then so does Virginia's, depending on how, you know, the exceptions and so forth, maybe there's some mitigating factor, but that's why it would have a, you know, implication for the other states beyond California that have similar policies, right?
Absolutely. Folks, that is it for this week. Do me a favor, go to your whatever podcast provider, or if this is on YouTube for some reason or on the app, leave us a review. Leave us a rating and a review. Say a couple of words. If you dare, try to spell Gutowski. Write the name Gutowski in the comment. And if it's correct, if you spell it correctly, you get nothing. I'm sorry. I'm just kidding. There's nothing to be gotten. But give it a shot. Gutowski. I got it memorized.
Yeah, that's good. It took me a long time to do that. You know, when I was, I remember in like elementary school, there was a class where we would, one of the like games, I guess, this is very nerdy to call this a game, but it was to spell your own name.
Right.
As a small child, I was just old enough to where I can remember this. So I don't know what that age would be, but, yeah. And I was not good at it. It was very hard. I mean, it's not fair. It's my parents' fault. I think, you know, Stephen with a PH, first of all, is not the common, I mean, it's the biblical spelling, I guess, but that's not how most people do it. And is not, you know, phonetic.
Right.
You would sound it out, but, and then Gutowski, right. It's a fairly rare Polish name that, another hard one. So I don't, you know, if you get it wrong in the, usually people add like an extra K in there after the really? T. I don't know why, but that's a common one. So I don't blame you if you get it wrong.
Excuse me. So yeah, growing up, I had the name Williver. Mike or Michael is pretty, everyone knows how to spell that. Williver shouldn't be that hard. It's just a compound word. Will, ever, those two words, put them together, you got my last name. But I get a lot of comments Will on the ever. YouTube channel. We sure do like that. Mike Wilbur. W-I-L-B-U-R for some reason, but whatever. Just don't call me late for dinner. Am I right?
There you go. There you go.
All right, folks. Thanks so much for listening. Go give us a rating and review. Go check out thereload.com. And Stephen, as always, sir, you have the last word.
Absolutely.